Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 117 of Nerd Pride Radio. 117 from Halo, of course, Master Chief John 117. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride smells exactly like an Ewok that's fresh out of the dryer. Okay. What's that noise?
Oppenheimer!
Oppenheimer! It's time for a little meta talk. Pulling back the curtain, just, you know, talking about the podcast, the website. I apologize. Last episode, maybe I'm the only one that noticed, probably not. Last episode was just full of clicks and bumps and background noises. And this is, again, have I mentioned this? This is why I want one of those really cool hanging microphones on the arm that comes down from above me, like you see professional radio and podcaster and stuff like that. I would love to have one of those because then you don't get that noise every time I touch the table for anything. I mean, even clicking R2 was causing the table to bump, and it was really bugging me. So I'm working really hard to try and cut those down this week, but now that I've pointed them out, you're going to notice every single little one. So sorry about that. But man, like I say, it just irked me. This wasn't even a reason to bring it up. It just irked me so bad. So I'm better than that. Better. Oh, and tonight, I don't know if you can hear Noah. He's got a cold, and he's playing games in the other room, but he's still loud enough that you're probably going to hear him cough and choke every once in a while. He is just, oh, poor kid. And actually, that'll be the other thing tonight, is we had a hectic week. Just terrible. And things are feeling better now, thank goodness. But, you know, people are getting a little sick and all this. And then today, it was awesome. Had a great time. Maybe you saw the Facebook pictures. We went out with the scouts for, this was a celebration for all the popcorn that we sold at our fundraiser. And so we had enough extra money that we had a huge party. And we went out and we all played laser tag, which was awesome. Oh, we went to, if you're ever in Yankton, South Dakota, right there on the border with Nebraska, just across the river. You go to Yankton, Nebraska, and you go to the Laser Barn. Oh, they were great. It was really, really cool. They've got a nice little setup and really professional, I mean, heavy, heavy laser tag guns with professional setup and this great indoor maze with all these stairs and wooden walls and places to shoot through and things to hide behind. And it was really good. We had a great time. And then after that, as if that wasn't enough, then we went over to the local college and we all went swimming. They've got like a almost a little miniature indoor water park at the college. So yeah, there's the pool and the laps and the all that stuff. But then there's also the shallow end with some kids stuff and a big slide. And so we went swimming for a couple hours. And I'm exhausted and a little scatterbrained. I mean, I can't remember the name of anything tonight. I keep stumbling over my words. So this may be an interesting podcast for both of us. You know, let's have a good time. Anyway, hey, enough of me complaining about stuff. We need to get directly into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, which is not so meticulous this week, but you'll see. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod. That's the pocket mod. And the best stuff off of this list is going to get spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And the only thing on the master list? Cue music.
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
That's right, it's fingertips. This is just me cleaning out my pocket mod, getting all sorts of stuff off the master list that has been sitting around for too long, or I couldn't develop into a proper topic or whatever, so I'm just going to read them through and talk about them. I was reorganizing the pocket mod, and I realized as I'm going through all the stuff where I've crossed things out and circled other stuff, so I move all the good stuff to fresh pages, and I realize I have two whole pages of stuff that I just haven't ever gotten to. So we're going to go through it, see what we can get, all right? First up, what do I have written here? I have written Evolution of My Pocket Mod. Yeah, this is the other thing. My pocket mods are getting more worn out by the time I fill them up because I am using it almost exclusively just for the master list now. All right, the pocket mod is almost entirely a Nerd Pride Radio podcast thing because for a while I was using it. You know, I'd write in my shopping lists, notes for things that I didn't want to remember or didn't want to forget. Scatterbrained. And I mean, I was using it for all sorts of things, you know, and then it got to the point where I am using so much stuff on my phone with Google Docs because not that the pocket mod isn't easier, and that was the beauty of the pocket mod. It's so easy to just kind of jot things down and go. But there are certain things like the shopping lists that if we do it on Google Docs, well, then my wife can put stuff on the shopping list, or I can, and then whoever goes to the store next winds up getting everything that we need, and it's just so much more convenient. And so we've been doing a lot of that, and therefore the pocket mod now, and I've been through, I was just counting the ones on my desk last week. I think I have like 20 old ones all stacked up on my desk. And so now, you know, I'm working on this latest one, and it's about three quarters full at this point, and it's just starting to get where the hinges are going to start falling apart on it. So I need to get through these things and get this pocket mod done with so I can start breaking out a new one. Anyway, that's the evolution of my pocket mod. There was the entire topic. Names. Names from History of Rome. Names for games that I play. Names for stories. I am fascinated by names. How many times have I touted the baby name wizard website here? Lots. Because I love names. I'm fascinated by names, name origins, name statistics, all sorts of stuff like that. And when I'm developing, especially my own games, planning an adventure or whatever, it's always a struggle to come up with exactly the right name for someone. And there will be plenty of times I will be just cruising along, writing down all my notes, getting all my information together, and then I'll get to, oh, hey, wait, I have a goblin chief that I need to, what would I name a goblin chief? And then I'll sit there for like a good 15 minutes trying out names. It's just a stumbling block for me every time. It's like this little, and I think it's one of those ways for me to keep myself from doing productive work is that I let myself get sidetracked by a name. Just like I'll get sidetracked by a statistic or a new way of rolling dice, and I'll go, oh, what if I rolled the dice this way? And then now I'm done writing the game for a little while because now I have to spend a half hour putting numbers into a spreadsheet to do some calculations. But anyway, the point about names, scatterbrained, is as I was listening to the end of the History of Rome podcast, which is so sad that I'm done with the History of Rome podcast. So sad. I did not realize what a hole that would leave in my life. I mean, I really didn't. Nothing else just seemed to be good enough. I mean, I tried the Revolutions podcast, and I'm still listening to the Revolutions podcast, where it's the same guy, Mike Duncan, I think his name is, who did History of Rome. He does Revolutions, and he's still doing it. And he's covering, the first one is the English Revolution. And it's really good. But it's not as good as History of Rome, and it's not as easy for me to listen to. For some reason, History of Rome, even though the names were bizarre, names were ones that I wasn't, you know, that don't trip easily off my tongue, for example, I didn't have any problem following them. But now, when it comes to the English Civil War, I am just, I keep losing track of who's who. It's just the toughest thing for me. I don't know why. Anyway, but back to my point about names is, as I was listening to the last few episodes of the History of Rome, I started jotting down names as they came up because I was realizing that every new name of someone in this podcast, and these are all real historical figures, every name I'm like, oh, that's a badass name. Oh, I need to use that one. Oh, this is coming around from about the 4th and 5th century. And some of the names, I'm not even going to, you don't even need context for where they came from, but some of the major players in history in those centuries in Europe, Gundobad. Oh, Gundobad's a great name. Ricimer. All right. Anthemium, Stilicho, Billimer, Odoacer. Oh, I love Odoacer. Gunseric. Gunseric. That's a great, it's got gun built right into it. I'm like, that is awesome. So I've now decided that, I'm going to start collecting names like that. And that way, when I need something for a game, I mean, any of those would make great barbarian names because a lot of them were actually barbarians. I mean, by the Roman definition of barbarian, don't make me get all detailed and pedantic about it. And, but they would make great barbarian names. They would make great, orc names or goblin names or all sorts of stuff. See, just hit the table. Did you hear it? Did you hear it? Oh, gotta be more careful about that. I was just amazed at how cool some of these historical names are and how appropriate they are for the kinds of games I'm running. So anyway, that was my point. What else do I have? Let's see. New math. This was actually one that Lucy just brought up on the forums, and I already had it in my master list. It's been here for a couple weeks, maybe almost a month. And then Lucy just brought it up this week, so I'm glad to have a chance to talk about it. The item I have written down says new math / common core. And the thing is, if you haven't seen anything about Common Core math recently, if you haven't seen people complaining about Common Core math on Facebook, count yourself lucky. Because apparently there's a new way of teaching math that is called Common Core. These are the Common Core standards or Common Core practices, however they phrase it. And Common Core is very different. It's something that you're not used to. And some of the elements of it are stuff that I see in my own kids' math. The ideas on how you're teaching stuff, teaching them to group things, teaching them to round, or that, you know, you can double this and it makes the whole process easier. You can move this stuff up. Anyway, it's not worth going into the details of how to do it, but it's very different from how I learned to do math. And so a lot of people online are making fun of Common Core. That they seem very upset that this seems like yet another, you know, wasteful idea by our government and by our educators that they're going through all this silliness and they're not actually teaching real math anymore. And so Common Core is getting a lot of hate. And if you go do some research on it, you realize that, oh, no, here's why they're doing it. I get it. It makes a lot of sense. It teaches kids not just how to do the math, but a different way of thinking about it that can help make the processing easier as they go. It really does make sense. You have to take my word for it if you haven't actually looked at it yourself. But what I thought was really interesting is I saw a video of, it's actually a song by Tom Lehrer, and it's a song that Tom Lehrer did back in the early 60s, and is a song making fun of New Math. And I remember New Math came out in late 50s, early 60s, and I only know about New Math, really, because of my dad's old Mad magazines where they made fun of New Math. And by the time I got into school, the New Math, quote-unquote New Math, was already the standard. But this song makes fun of New Math in exactly the same sort of way that people today are making fun of Common Core. And so it's making fun of it, and it walks through the processes. And some guy actually put some animation to it to illustrate the ideas that the guy was... that Tom Lehrer was singing about. And it is amazing because you listen to how they're making fun of it and how, oh, new math, it makes no sense. This is stupid. Look, we already had a perfectly good way of doing subtraction and division and blah, blah, blah. So why would you bother with all of this junk that's just adding confusion? This doesn't even make any sense. Why would you do that? All right. And it sounds exactly like what they're doing nowadays to make fun of Common Core. But here's the magic. You have to go watch this video. It's Tom Lehrer, New Math. And and that's actually the title of the song, New Math. You have to go watch it, because when you see what he's making fun of, he's making fun of it as being nonsensical, and I'm looking at it going, no, but that's the way you do math, because that's what I learned. Like, that's exactly how you do math. The idea that I didn't realize that before New Math, the standard process for subtraction involved carrying, just like in addition, when you add up and you come up with, okay, 7 plus 8, it's 15, so 5, carry a 1, great. When you did subtraction also involved carrying. That you wound up, it looked very similar to the addition carrying, rather than nowadays in subtraction, we borrow and we actually demonstrate that, yes, we have taken one away from this number and we've added it over here in order to make, this one, you know, to move the 4 to a 14 or whatever it is. We actually demonstrate how we are moving 1 from here and that becomes 10 over here. And before New Math, people didn't have that as a concept. I mean, that's what you're doing, but they just shorthanded the way the notation was done. So a kid maybe didn't understand that that's why it works, that's why that subtraction works, is because you're actually taking one from over here. All they saw is, oh, you subtract, but it was too big, so you just carry a one, and it goes down here somewhere. I don't even remember how it worked. And it was just silly, to my mind. I mean, I'm looking at the way they did it before, and I'm like, okay, yeah, but this one makes sense, but they're making fun of it. All right, I've over-explained all of that. The point is, and there's nothing wrong with Common Core. The point is that in the history of math instruction, math itself doesn't change a whole lot. I mean, addition is addition. Fractions are still fractions. Things still work the same way that they always have. But what is different is how we approach it and how we teach it. And it seems like about every 20 years, we have an uproar because educators have decided that there's a better way to teach these concepts. That, hey, look, here's where kids start to struggle with math. Here's the parts that frustrate kids, that they think that they're no good at math, or they think it's too hard for them. And maybe if they have a better understanding of why it works, then they're better at moving on to the higher concepts because they can build from that. And so about every 20 years, we get some new shift in things, and we get then people on the other side who are just resistant to anything different. That's not the way I learned, therefore it must be wrong and stupid. It's not intuitive to me because I already learned this way, so therefore it must be idiotic. And it's frustrating to see people doing this. It's frustrating to see people railing against something simply because they don't understand it. It's weird. It reminds me of, and I don't know if I've told you this before. I think I have. I think I've told this story before. The idea that if you encounter a word that you don't understand, if you encounter a word that maybe you've heard but you don't know the meaning of, or maybe you've never heard this word at all, what's your instinctive reaction to that? I don't know about you. My instinctive reaction is, I generally, if I have a computer handy, and I almost always do, is I go look the word up because if someone uses a really interesting word, especially if it's in a really interesting context, I'm like, oh, that might be a useful word. I may need to know that. I may want to use that from now on. For example, the word esoteric. I have been hearing the word esoteric for years, and only in the last 6 months or a year did I learn that the exact meaning of esoteric is specialized knowledge, generally only understandable to those in a certain in-group, the ones it's esoteric, right? And I didn't know that that was the exact definition of it. I don't know what I thought it was for sure, but I knew that I didn't have it quite right. And then finally I got the real definition. I'm like, oh, esoteric, that is such a useful word. I have got to use that more often. And so I do. But around here, and maybe this is a common thing across the country, big vocabularies seem to be something that people want to make fun of. The idea that, look, me, my wife, my kids, we all have very sophisticated vocabularies for the most part, and we will use words that we don't even think are that big a deal, and people will honestly, what kind of word is that? We live in Nebraska. Speak Nebraskan, for goodness sake. I'm like, really? You're going to make fun of someone for knowing things? rather than, and now, and that's not everybody, but it is a large chunk of people. But there's also lots of people I know who, when they come across a word, like, my son's fiance, when we first met, I mean, she was only 15 when we first met her, and she would come around, we would use all sorts of weird words that she had never encountered before because she's 15. And every single time she'd be like, wow, what does that word mean? And then we'd explain it. Oh, okay. And, you know, slowly it builds up over time. That's the right attitude, is you hear a word you've never heard before, ask, look it up. Don't just sit there and nod your head because you don't want to look dumb. Figure some stuff out. So anyway, that's my railing against people who rail against ignorance. There you go. All right. What's next on my pocket mod here? Hold on. I need to cross some things off. Evolution of pocket mod. Okay. Names. New math. All right. What's next? Let's see. Oh, all right. Character backgrounds. I was reading an article online that says, oh, sorry, had to pause. I don't even remember where I was. I know I was talking about character backgrounds. Anyway, I saw an article, someone linked it from Facebook or whatever, doesn't matter. And I saw this article that said character backgrounds, how, you know, it was like four good reasons or the four best reasons to create character backgrounds. Now, to me, I thought when you're in a role-playing game and you've designed your new character, I thought a character background was just, it's kind of a given that, well, of course you're going to give your character some sort of background. It doesn't have to be complicated. But, you know, my question was always, okay, long background versus short background. I mean, do you just give a quick, you know, like three or four sentences that said, yes, they came from this area and had this experience, and here's a couple of personality traits, done. Character's ready. I'll make up the rest as we go. So the difference between a short background like that one or a long background where you do, you know, like me, I like three or four paragraphs for a character. Sometimes I'll do like a page, you know, maybe a little bit more, but not much more. And, you know, you can do those, or do you write out full, you know, 12-page, you know, are you writing a novella to explain your character's background and, you know, everything from adolescence up to the moment that they began adventuring, or, you know, I've seen all sorts. And so for me, that's the real debate is, yeah, of course you're going to do a background, but is it going to be just a quick one? Is it going to be a little more detailed? Is it going to be a book? Is it? No, this article was on why you should do backgrounds. And I'm like, really? That's even a question? And it turns out, yeah, my experience is not necessarily the norm. I mean, the idea that there are lots of people. I mean, according to the comment section of this article, it looked like at least half the people commenting who say that, yeah, there's at least one person in their group who just shows up and all they have is a set of stats. They've got their stats and their skills and their weapons and they're ready to go. And that's it. And, okay, well, what about character background? Well, I'll make something up if I need it. But other than that, I mean, they don't have a personality. They don't have to them, it's just numbers on a page. They're just ready to go. I mean, well, you said we're playing D&D, so I got myself a barbarian. What else do you want? And I guess, all right. I mean, you know, that's the style of game you want to play, but it was just foreign to me. The idea that, but you don't have any personality at all. I mean, other than I'm a barbarian, I want to kill stuff. It just seemed weird. I could not relate to it at all. So how about you? Seriously, are you in the quick and dirty background? How much detail do you like to put in? Do you like to write 12 pages? Zen? Is that you? I mean, come on. And to me, the only thing I don't like about long character backgrounds is I get impatient with reading them. But I also know how much fun it is to write a background, even if nobody else reads it or nobody else gets to anything but the highlights. Even if your own game master doesn't want to bother to read through your whole novella about your character, it doesn't matter. It's worth it because A, it's fun for you to write it. And B, the more detail you put into a character background, the more you informed you are about how that character is going to react about stuff. That you have this wealth of knowledge that even if you don't even write it all down, even if you don't share it with everybody, You know, maybe you've told everybody else just the basics, but in your head you have a very long description of your character. Then you have some basis for, okay, here we are. Oh, yeah. He'd definitely do this because of, and it's cool. You don't ever have to reveal any of that stuff necessarily, but it certainly informs how you play the character. And I love that. I really love that. But that's just me. So there you go. That was my character background notes. What else do I have? Zipf's Law. Zipf being Z-I-P-F. Zipf's Law. Oh man. This is a tough one. This is a, I don't even know if I want to go into it because I only know the basics of it and there's more detail, but it's been a while since I looked at it. But essentially, if you look at any language, and I believe it was it letter frequency or was it word frequency? Oh, see, I don't even remember that level of detail. But, yeah, I think it was word frequency. Find the most common word in your language. All right, whatever language it is. All right, and find out how often that word occurs. You know, so in a sample of, you know, 200,000 words of text, how many occurrences of your most common word do you have? And in English, I think that would be the, I think. And then you look at the second most common word and almost exactly your second most common word is going to occur about half as often as your first most common word. Really? No matter what the language? Really? That's bizarre. Okay. The third most common language or common word in your language is going to be about one third of the most common word. The fourth one's going to be about one fourth as often. And it forms this really smooth distribution curve that, and again, I might have any of the details of this wrong, but it is the idea that you look at the, how often words appear in a certain language and they follow this very definitive curve. And it can be, for example, any collection of the language. So if you look at, you take the King James Version of the Bible and you lay out all the words from the King James Version of the Bible, and they will fall in this same distribution, the same curve, the Zipf's Law. And so, you know, in the King James Version of the Bible, the word Jesus is going to appear way more often than, say, the Lord of the Rings. All right. But the distribution of words for the Bible, because you have a large enough sample of words, is going to follow this curve. But then you go take the Lord of the Rings trilogy and you do an analysis of that one. It's going to have a different set of words, but they're still going to fall in the same distribution. Here's the most common word, then your second most common one comes up half as often. Third most common one, a third as often, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just fascinated by that. And it doesn't matter if it's English. It doesn't matter what language it is. It doesn't matter which set. As long as you have a large enough set to look at, so you can get, you know, a fair distribution. So you actually have a word that is, you know, the 500th most common word appears about 1/500th as often as the first most common word. That's crazy. I mean, that's really crazy that it would do that. And then here's the thing is the article or video or whatever it was I saw on Zipf's Law. I suppose you can go to YouTube and look up Zipf's Law and you'll find stuff about it, which is probably where I found it. I don't even remember now. Aiden was showing it to me. But Zipf's Law also appears as a distribution in other contexts other than just word frequency in a language. And it's just fascinating. Fascinating. So there we go. There was my little bit of science, but I wrote it down because I thought, ooh, I could get all sorts of information on this. I could do a whole big science section on it. And then it turned out that I was never quite interested enough to go back and do more research than I already had. Maybe if I wasn't so busy. We'll see. Anyway, what's next? Guillotine. Did I tell you we played Guillotine? Finally. And I have a whole list of things that I've just finally gotten to. But the most important ones are, I'll get back to Guillotine. I started reading my brother's book. Finally. Oh man. A while back, I told you guys I was a few chapters in, but then I stopped. Well, now I went back and I started reading it in earnest and I realized, oh wait, no, I wasn't a few chapters in. I was one chapter in. I had read chapter one and then gave up Now I'm actually reading in earnest, and I'm going to get through it. And I am hooked. Oh, my God. Kyle, I apologize for not getting to this sooner. I made it into this monumental task in my head, and I just kept putting it off because it just seemed like it was so big. Because your first book was so big, and this one also so big. But now, you know, I'm like, 21% of the way in or 25% of the way in, and I'm making real progress on it. And it's great. And I think I'll have it done in about a week at the rate I'm reading, because I can't devote hours and hours like I would like to. But I'm getting through it, and it's really good. All right, my wife had already told me that it's actually better than the first book, to which I'm like, no, that's not possible, because the first book was really good, and it ended. For those of you who haven't read, I'm going to try and avoid spoilers here. But the first book ended in such a way that, okay, if you keep the same main character, I don't know where you go with her from here. I don't know what you do with Abby at that point that makes an interesting tale. And yet, I see where he's going with it, or at least I see how it's starting, and I'm completely hooked. I'm like, that's cool. That makes perfect sense. So, my brother's first book is, The Norn's Quest, and the second book is Motsagnir's Game, both by Kyle Jones. If you have not read my brother's books, as I have been putting off, go out and buy them, read them. They're on Amazon, they're cheap, and they're super good. All right, super good. You just take my word for this. My brother is a really good writer, and the third book could be coming out any day now, or in a year, or I don't know when it's coming out. But hopefully, I'll have this one done, and I'll be ready to go. So, Kyle, again, I apologize. I should not have taken so long. I should have just gotten over myself and gotten done with it. But, you know, hey, I'm there now, and that's all that matters. So, that's the first thing I did that I've been putting off. Then there's a bunch of stuff at work that I was kind of letting slide because no one cares and no one looks, and it kind of needs to get done, but I just hadn't gotten to it yet. Okay, that clicking, that's the guinea pigs. That is not my fault. It's my fault in as much as I haven't poisoned them yet, but I only haven't poisoned them because I'm a nice guy. All right. See, God, what are they going on about? But anyway, the other thing was Guillotine. Guillotine is a card game that I have owned for at least a year, and never broken out, never taken the plastic off of it, finally played it, and it is so good. It is so good. And the motivation was, my buddy Kaz had posted, months ago, had posted something about, and I already told you guys this story, how the creator of Guillotine had said in his lesson on how to create games, he said, hey, if you ever play Guillotine, the minute you open that pack, find the card marked Callous Guards, throw that sucker away, burn it, never use it, because the Callous Guards do nothing but stop players from having fun. That is the function of the card. Is the most fun thing about this game is rearranging the line and maneuvering for position, and the Callous Guards stop you from doing that, potentially for half the game. Why would you put something in your game that takes away the fun part? So, I couldn't get that out of my head. I already talked to you guys about it. So I opened up my Guillotine, which, by the way, includes a stand-up guillotine. Oh, how nice is that? We love having the stand-up guillotine. It doesn't need to be there, but it's so cool that it is. And so I opened up my Guillotine. I threw away the Callous Guards immediately. Well, I didn't throw them away. I just tucked them into the rule book and put them back in the box so they will never be with the other cards. And because I'm thinking, I don't want to throw it away. I mean, what if I want to, at some point, frame it, put it up somewhere, make it into something else? You never know when it might be useful. And Guillotine itself is a blast. Me and Aiden and Eli and Noah all played several games, and it was spectacular. Just so much fun. Because, I mean, it's really, you line up 12 nobles who are waiting in line to get their heads chopped off, and then all the players are executioners. And so on your turn, you're going to draw a card, play a card, and then take whoever the first head in line is, and that's the points you get for that. All right. So, as you draw cards and play cards, you use those to rearrange the line. Someone faints and falls back a few places, or, religious figures get to move up, or, oh, you score extra points for these, or you get to take two heads this round, whatever the card is, right? And so you get to shuffle the line, rearrange, and try and get the best heads up to the front so you can collect the most points. And we had a blast. It's a very cutthroat game, and there's a lot of random chance involved in it, but then there's also enough skill and math involved that the older players have a distinct advantage of being able to plot a few moves ahead and all of this. And Aiden, by the way, won everything. He kicked ass. So, but it was really fun. I would play that again in a heartbeat. It was great. Let's see. What else is after Guillotine? Next, I have... No. Oh, man. There's all sorts of stuff getting here that I don't... Boy, this is really tough. Hey. Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert. Did you know he's a bizarre misogynist? Yeah. Weird, huh? Which, yeah, and I understand. As someone pointed out on the forums, yes, I know. There are people who create things that I love, and it turns out that those people have weird ideas that I don't agree with. I love Ender's Game, and Orson Scott Card is a gross homophobe. That's too bad. That's too bad. But, you know, I wasn't surprised by that. I was just disappointed. Whereas Dilbert, the Dilbert cartoon, I've always liked it. It's always been very funny. It seemed very insightful about office life and relationships and people. And so, therefore, I felt like Scott Adams had a at least reasonable grip on what people are like. And it turns out that no, he's a bizarre misogynist. He's a men's rights advocate who says horribly gross and misinformed things. And that's just sad, unexpected and sad. And I don't read Dilbert much anymore because, you know, I don't have a regular newspaper, and I don't. It's not like I have his comic bookmarked online. I could, I just don't. So it's not like I run across Dilbert a lot anymore anyway. He's, you know, he was huge 10 years ago or 15. How long ago was Dilbert the big rage? I don't remember. But, you know, if I saw Dilbert now, I would still read it and enjoy it if I came across a Dilbert comic strip. But, you know, every time it would be but boy, that guy's a jerk. Wow. So it was just disappointing. So too bad. I have here, this is a great one. I think I'm going to save this one, but the note I wrote, and you'll have to pardon my language, the note I wrote is, science is fucking hard. Yeah, that's how I wrote it down, because that was a direct quote from the article I was reading. And just to, a while back, I talked about potential bias in science and the ways that results may not be what we think they are, et cetera, et cetera. And this was an article that was talking about exactly that and said, no, it turns out that science is still a really good process. You know, that our scientific method and our ways of doing research and sharing research are not bad. And there's nothing wrong with the process. But the problem is that there are mistakes that are made. Sometimes intentionally, we have people who are fudging information or people who are manipulating things to try and get certain results. But a lot of times, it's not intentional. It's just that science is fucking hard. There's a lot that goes into science. There's a lot that goes into doing it right. And so it's not about the mistakes that science is making, because, of course, scientists are human. They're going to make mistakes. But it's about the process that we have that keeps reviewing those things and catching those mistakes and finding ways to make sure that, you know, when we see a study that is unusual, that, okay, there's a process for checking that. There's a process for verifying that. That's the whole point of science, is that when you get scientific results, you're not getting a certainty on anything. You're getting a, hey, here's the probability that this is correct, or here's the probability that, you know, the p-value, the probability that if our hypothesis were false, the p-value is, here's the probability that we would have seen those same results anyway. So you're not getting you're not getting direct causality. It's not science saying that, hey, this causes this, or here's the, it's them saying that, hey, you know what, there's a good chance that this might be true. And then it's up to the rest of science to then check on that and get multiple studies and multiple results and be able to aggregate that and come up with something else. Science is fucking hard. That's what it comes down to. But this is one that I need to do more research on. I am fascinated by the topic. I am weekly finding more articles in this sort of vein, and I still don't feel like I have a solid picture of the world of science, the scientific community right at this moment. There's so much there. And so I don't feel really qualified to go into detailed analysis of stuff, but I find it fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. All right. That science is hard. And, oh, all right. More science. Me and Noah were talking the other night, and I was tucking him into bed, in fact. And I went into his room, and I remember, because I asked him, I said, so when you grow up, get out of this house, you find, make a life for yourself, you think you're ever going to go to the moon? And he said, no. He said, I don't think I could ever be an astronaut. I'm like, yeah, but what if you don't have to be an astronaut? What if when you're old enough, there are people who just go to the moon on vacation? What if you could go up just as a tourist? What if you could go up? He's like, that could happen? And I said, well, let me tell you something. So we started talking about the recent commercial space ventures, because somebody just beat SpaceX up into the first vehicle that could make it to space and then return to Earth, all right, as opposed to the shuttles, which were cool, and the shuttles returned to Earth, but the shuttles also involved huge disposable rockets that you want to get your shuttle up there. Great. Well, you need this huge booster rocket that then falls away and is trashed now. And then you have to build a new one of those to get the shuttle back up the next time. And okay, so now the challenge is, yeah, but what if we can do it with completely reusable rockets? Ooh, there you go. What if the whole vehicle goes up and then the whole vehicle comes back down? That makes sense, right? Hey, there's a son of mine. His name is Eli. Hi, Eli. He snuck through the living room, crab walking sideways as if you guys wouldn't hear him. That was pretty cool. And so anyway, with Noah, I said, maybe then, because up till now it's always been the government that takes care of getting people out to space, but maybe just like commercial interests have started getting, contributing to getting satellites out there, well, maybe commercial interests will start getting people out there, and maybe you'll be able to travel to the moon. He was amazed by that. And I said, but you know what else is coming? And I told him about James Webb, the James Webb Space Telescope coming. I've told you guys a million times, but I'm going to tell you again, because I told Noah, I said, they're going to put that up there, and it's going to be the most powerful telescope we've ever had. I said, you know what we'll be able to see with that? And he immediately said, the edge of the universe? And I said, almost, but even better, the beginning of the universe. He's like, huh? Yeah, I lost him on that one. So I said, how long does it take light to go one light year? He says, a year. I said, right, exactly. So when we look at a star that's one light year away, we're seeing that star a year ago, because that's when that light started moving towards us. Okay. So if we look at a star that's 100 light years away, what do we see? He said, a star 100 years ago. I go, right. So let's follow that all the way back. I said, do you know how old the universe is? The universe is almost 14 billion years old. And I said, so if we could see with the James Webb Space Telescope, if we could see 14 billion light years away, well, we'd be looking at stuff that started, the light started coming to us 14 billion years ago. That would be light from the beginning of the universe. And he went, whoa. And I mean, it was just, you could just see the wonder in his eyes. And so we started talking about, hey, look, planets, because this is where I'm really thrilled. I said, up till now, we've been finding all these planets, and we can tell that they're there because of the way the light changes when they pass in front of their star, or the way their star wobbles back and forth as they rotate around. I said, but now with James Webb, we might just be able to just look at them and just see them directly. And he was stunned. It was inspirational, guys. I'm telling you, watching Noah's face, 9-year-old kid, and watching his face as the wonders of the universe open up to him, I could have cried. It was so sweet. That's what science is about. That's what this podcast is about. That joy. Oh, it was so cool. So anyway, that was how it went. You know what? We're 45 minutes in, and I wound up getting sidetracked earlier, so I started all the listener betrayal stuff, and then I recorded a few minutes, and then I walked away for like a half hour. And it's up to you guys to figure out which part of this I left for a half hour and you didn't know. So there's actually probably lots of listener betrayal out there, but we'll get to that in a minute, because before the listener betrayal, we have the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do those topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in, and I'll have more about that in a minute. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. I have so many Pod-O-Matics, guys. You guys are great. Holy crow. I am not even kidding you. I went, I was just adding them up today. I have got 200 Pod-O-Matics available, of which, by the way, Mrs. Darks, you own a quarter of those. My brother Kyle, you also own a quarter of those. All right, so there's half of them is just those two people. But then the rest, boy, you guys have really been pitching in. Now, I did this week, sadly, have Lucy comment to me and say, oh, you know, I must just be missing the episodes that have all my stuff in it, because somehow I never hear my questions anymore. And so I looked it up, and it turns out, oh, Lucy, I read all your questions. Yeah, can you believe it? They're all gone. So Lucy, Billy Bob, Zen, Talvin, DM Darks. DM Darks, take a lesson from your wife. Seriously. Jeff Hawes, you guys, I've gone through all your questions. And there's some of the rest of you who are, you know, getting down there a little bit, But I've used up all your questions. I don't know if it's important to you that I keep saying your names over and over, but if you want to send me more, I would always welcome it. But those of you who have been sending in stuff, so much here. This is so good. Anyway, enough of that. Like I say, guys, contribute. Pitch in. You'll enjoy it. All right. I'll enjoy it. Do my work for me, people. Anyway, the first number is 01. How auspicious. Right at the top of my list. 01 is, it's from my brother Kyle. And Kyle says, okay, how do you defend these Marvel movies and their formula? Oh, this will be good. How do you defend these Marvel movies and their formula? You like the ones I hate. Cap 2, Ultron? Ugh, so tired of it. And Iron Man 3, the best of the recent lot. You hate that one? I guess you just like the retread. Defend yourself this time, and don't use the Marvel TV shows as a defense to how they're new and original and awesome. Those are TV shows, dummy. Last time you used those to defend yourself, to defend your indefensible position, and that was cheating. Okay. First off, Cap 2 was a good movie, alright? You obviously disagree. Cap 2 was a good movie. It was a critique and attack on our current Big Brother monitoring state, all right, which I thought was awesome. And it is Captain America at his Captain America-y best, where when Captain America stands up for personal liberty, when he stands up for the principles of America that maybe America itself has fallen away from to a degree, that's Captain America at his best. That was Captain America saying, yeah, I understand that this is how our government operates, and I don't like it. All right, it was him standing up against that and trying to bring that down. And yes, okay, great. It turns out that our government is only being evil because there's a huge evil ex-Nazi behind all of it. And it's not that our government itself is inherently corrupt or whatever. All right, so that's the conceit they use. But I didn't find it formulaic at all. I honestly don't know what you're talking about. All right, Ultron was absolutely formulaic. Ultron was exactly the same as the first Avengers movie and Guardians of the Galaxy, and I grant you that, and it is not their strongest movie. I grant you all of that, which doesn't change the fact that I really enjoyed it. All right? It's not their strongest movie, and it's not my favorite, but I liked it. I enjoyed it. I had no problem with it. Now, the problem with Iron Man 3 is that Iron Man 3 did this deep character study of Iron Man and did it while discounting any logic in the cinematic universe. All right? The consequences of all of the things that he did with technology in that movie, the consequences of all of that technology, it's mind-blowing. It's astounding. The idea that he had that many and that he had, that they have independent AIs in them, that they have, that he can control them all, in different ways, that the suits can just automatically fly out and fit onto anybody at any time, and that somehow Pepper can be an expert in using her suit at the, anyway, all the stuff that went into it. I mean, the fact that he can have an army at his disposal, and then he just throws that entire army away at the end. And it's all stuff that if you kept the ideas and implications of that movie, they would break the universe. Everything in there was overblown and overdone and great. So they did this deep character study of Tony. You know what? We saw that in the one before too. It's not like we haven't watched Tony. It's not like, it was not a strong movie. I thought it was, I mean, the action was phenomenal. Loved the action. It was great, but it was too much. It was, they went so far overboard that there's, it seems silly that they try and then reel it back and make him just Iron Man again, after being, you know, the god of all robots. It didn't work for me. I'm sorry. Okay. But more importantly than that, oh, and since you mentioned the Marvel TV shows, yeah, Jessica Jones is awesome, by the way. But that's not relevant to this discussion because we're just talking about the movies, okay? Yes, the big ones, all right? Thor 2, terrible, all right? Ultron, yeah, absolutely formulaic. Guardians of the Galaxy, absolutely formulaic. But I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. I still maintain that Guardians of the Galaxy is a great movie. All right, Ultron is just a good movie, an enjoyable movie, but not groundbreaking, all right? But and I agree with you that going forward, all right, we're going to get to Captain America Civil War coming up here. We've got Marvel movies coming out of our ears over the next few years. I grant you, they're going to have to figure out how to get out of that formula and do new stuff if they want to keep making it fresh, all right? You can do this a few times, but yeah, they're going to have to change. But here's the more important point to all of this, is what kind of troll are you? I can't believe that you've become the kind of person who's going to set himself up as the quality police and decide what it's okay to like. Is that really who you are, Kyle? Is it? I suspect it is. And that's sad, isn't it? See, what I think you should do is if you haven't been watching Steven Universe like I've been telling you to go watch Steven Universe, then go watch Steven Universe right now, all right? And episode 51 is the one that is relevant to this particular discussion, all right? But it will be up to you to watch all of them because you have to watch them in order. You really do. I mean, 51 you could maybe watch out of order, and there'd still be some little spoiler stuff in it, but it wouldn't be bad. But, oh, no, there'd be some big spoiler stuff. But, yeah, no, you're going to have to watch all of them in order. But when you get to episode 51, which is the one where him and Connie are discussing the ending of a book, right? And you'll know it when you get to it. It's perfectly relevant here, and I think you could take a lesson from it. That's what I'm saying. Because seriously, dude, this podcast is about loving what we love and not being ashamed of loving what we love. That's the whole point of being a nerd, all right, is take joy in the things that bring you joy and share them with others. And that's what we're doing, all right? And, okay, so you love Iron Man 3? I think Iron Man 3 was overblown and overdone, but I don't knock you for liking Iron Man 3. It just didn't work for me at all. So you know what? Maybe I'm just a better person than you. Is that what it comes down to? All right, enough of this. I don't like playing the bad guy. Anyway, yes, I understand your point. I just don't agree with you. I enjoyed watching Ultron. All right, and I know you like to characterize it as Ultron was my favorite movie. No, it was not my favorite movie. In fact, I don't even know that I put it in my top 10 for last year at all. I don't think it's anywhere near the top. But it's a movie that I enjoyed. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. Here, there we go. Let's save ourselves from all this and go to 58. 58 is from Mrs. Darks. Told you these two were the ones ruling the board today. Mrs. Darks says, "Do you listen to audiobooks?" I have in the past. I don't right now. Do you consider listening to one to be the equivalent of having read the book? Yes. Yes, I do. Okay. Depends on what you mean by equivalent. I don't want to be pedantic about it, but, in general, yeah. Yeah. If I've heard the book read, then I've got the book. Okay. Or if I read it myself, it'll be a different experience. It is not equivalent. It's certainly a different experience in how you take it in, but I don't think either one is more valuable than the other. I don't think either one is less valid than the other. It's just different experience. So, the last time I listened to audiobooks was probably 10 years ago, before I discovered podcasts is when it was. And, I would get audiobooks. Mostly I'd just check them out from the library. I would get audiobooks and I would listen to them. And it was, a lot of them were science ones, history ones, the same kind of stuff that I'm interested in podcasts now. And I listened to a few sci-fi novels and I always enjoyed them. And yes, and having listened to them, I would certainly be willing to say to somebody if they start asking about the book, I'm like, oh, yeah, I read that one. And maybe clarify that, well, listen to it on audiobook, or maybe I wouldn't clarify. Who knows? But yeah, I certainly think that listening to it on audiobook does not cheapen the experience. Just makes it different. Oh, before I roll again, when I was talking about all the people who had contributed, Kaz contributed one question. All right, which I'm thrilled about because I'm so excited that Kaz is listening to the show. Kaz has been my friend for years and years. And after Animal Ball, because we've collaborated on projects together and we've gamed together and we've just had a great time. And after Animal Ball went down, Kaz faded into the background for a while. He moved on to other interests. I don't know if it was, you know, more busy with his family or more busy with work or just, you know, just wasn't sharing the same interests that we had at the time or whatever. Doesn't matter because Kaz has come back and he's listened to the podcast. And hey, welcome back, Kaz. I have missed you so much. It's so cool to have you around. Seriously. And R2 says 46. 46 is from, oh, it's from DM Darks. Wait a minute, didn't I just say you don't have any DM Darks? How is this even possible? Is it spelled wrong? What am I looking at? I was wrong. DM Darks, you have two of them. I'm sorry. I can't believe I criticized you. You still had two questions left. Well, now you have one question left because I'm going to read this one. DM Darks says, did you ever own any bookcase games from Avalon Hill? Didn't I answer this one before at some point? I think I did. Anyway, I never owned any bookcase games myself, but my dad did. I don't know when bookcase games came out. Were they in the 70s? Earlier than that? I could look it up, I suppose. But bookcase games were awesome because they look like these huge, you know, they're the size and texture of, you know, some huge tome that you would keep on your shelf. But then you pull it down and it's a bookcase game. And you open it up and it could be any sort of game. They were all weird different ones. There was one that, you know, you opened it out and it had this plastic board with these pegs, and as you put your pegs down, you then lay bridges in between them and try and connect from one side of the board to the other. And that was really cool. They had Stocks and Bonds was the one we played most often, and Stocks and Bonds had this simple system, relatively simple, where you can buy different stocks and bonds, and then you draw cards and you roll the dice and you wind up having a bull market or a bear market. And then you check the little chart and it says, okay, in this, you know, setup, oh, if you get this card, these dice, whatever it is, then these stocks go up and down by this amount. And then, you know, if they go up enough, stocks will split. Some of them pay dividends, some of them don't. And by the end, you're just trying to make the most money. And if you played it enough times, eventually we figured out that, oh, you know what? The laws of averages tell us that, you know, here's the two that you just invest in consistently. Because there was no real solid way to predict what was going to happen from year to year. It's not like with real stocks where you can follow a trend and go, oh, this technology is on the rise now. No, it's that you could look at the charts and say, you know, in hard numbers, here's how well they're going to perform for any particular role. And so therefore, you know, all you had to do was add up which one had the most good results. And that would be the one that you need to buy most often. But it was a lot of fun. And I think we stole those and took them to college with us. I remember having bookcase games in college. Were those my dad's, or did someone else have them while we were in college? Anyway, I don't remember, but yes, I have played, probably four or five different bookcase games. And those are the only two I can remember right off the top of my head. It's the one with the pegs and bridges, and then stocks and bonds. And I know that there were others there. I just can't remember what they were called. But yeah, I played them and I loved them. They were really cool. 29 comes from, let's see. Oh, there it is. Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, is it still useful to learn Latin if you don't plan on being in the clergy or a Latin scholar? Yes. Knowledge in general is useful. I like knowledge. And I find Latin to be very interesting. I like Latin. Sometimes taking Latin is just to build your nerd cred, I guess. Is it useful? I don't know. Because there's a bunch of Latin that is helpful, you know, in science, for example. I mean, there's lots of things that are built from Latin. Scientific names are all built from Latin. It's handy to know, but also you pick up a lot of that Latin vocabulary just by experience. And so maybe, do you actually need to learn Latin? Do you need to learn the grammatical structure? Do you need to learn all the details of how to speak and write and use Latin? Are those lessons any more instructional than the same grammatical and processing lessons you would get from learning any foreign language? I don't know. But I don't know. It's knowledge, and I don't knock anyone who wants knowledge for its own sake. I mean, is learning Latin any more or less useful than being able to memorize 450 Pokemon? Yeah, we all have our little niches of knowledge, our specialized knowledge. And to me, Pokemon is always my example of esoteric. Remember that word? All right. My example of esoteric knowledge is, it's all Pokemon. You know, anytime someone says something that I don't quite understand, I mean, I work with computers. This is my whole job. And there will still be people from the networking side of it that start talking about security protocols, and they'll start throwing out acronyms and stuff like that. And my response will be, okay, well, I don't know anything about Pokemon, but I get that this is bad and we need to work on whatever. But yeah, anytime I don't understand anything, instead of saying it's all Greek to me, it's always, I don't understand Pokemon. But that kind of that kind of specialized esoteric knowledge is the kind of stuff that, in games, for example, you know, we love our esoteric knowledge. There's a value to that makes us feel like we're part of the in-group, that we've played Pathfinder long enough that we have all of those little bits, and we know how feats work together, and we understand combat intuitively, and it makes us feel really good about ourselves because we understand the inner workings of the system. Same thing with learning all the Pokemon, which, again, is completely foreign to me. And so learning Latin and knowing not just, you know, all these words and their roots and where they came from, but also knowing grammatically how to use them and put them together and the process and evolution of the whole thing, that is useful esoteric knowledge in that it just makes you feel special. Is that wrong? Is it wrong that you want knowledge just for its own sake? Yeah, I mean, I don't know where Latin is actually useful outside of clergy or Latin scholarship. I mean, if you're going to be translating old Latin texts, well, then clearly, then, you know, you need some Latin. But in everyday use, yeah, not so much. I mean, maybe more useful than Pokemon, but not anything you can't live without, I suppose. All right, you know what? I don't even have a point. I've gone on too long. One more. 03, back to the top of the list. 03 comes from my brother Kyle. Oh, and it's another long one. All right, hold on. Let me try it. There we go. This is our fifth one. All right, Kyle says, what's your take on wacky socks? You know the guy. Always happy to lift his pant legs so you can compliment him on his wacky socks. On the one hand, I can really aesthetically enjoy a wacky sock. You know, like, part of me wants that sock. But on the other hand, isn't it a bit needy? On the third hand, isn't he crowding out the want-to-hear-stories-about-my-8-kids guy? Okay. yeah, look, I don't mind the occasional wacky sock. I get it. I don't wear any myself. I've had some in the past. I mean, I've had a couple of pair, but I don't think I've worn a wacky sock in a decade or more. But I don't have any problem with wacky socks. You just don't want to be, you don't want to, I don't know that you want to be the parrot guy, okay? This is the guy Penn and Teller describe in one of their books. They describe, was it Cruel Tricks for Dear Friends or was it How to Play with Your Food? It was one of those. I think it was Cruel Tricks for Dear Friends. Either way, one of their books, yeah, it involves a bunch of pranks. And they said, look, we're going to offer you a bunch of really cool things here and a lot of really fun things. But, you know, some of them are just for your entertainment and reading pleasure. And some of them you'll actually use and apply, but do so in moderation. Don't be the parrot guy. And they describe the parrot guy as, you know, when they visited this island and here was the parrot guy. And he's the guy who walks among the tourists and he's always got a parrot on his shoulder, a live parrot, and it talks. And when you're there, every conversation he has revolves around the parrot and him showing off his parrot. And once the parrot's gone, that guy has nothing. The parrot was there in place of a personality. And so, you know, they said, hey, we've got all these tricks and pranks and all that, and they're great. But don't become the prank guy. Don't be that dude because, well, you know what? You need to have a real personality because eventually the pranks are going to run out or people are going to get really sick and tired of them. And you need to be a real person. So, God, don't be the parrot guy. So, same thing with your wacky socks. Don't be the wacky sock guy. You're going to have some cool socks, some wild socks, some humorous socks, whatever they're going to be. Great. Have them. And wear them occasionally. Or if you wear them every day, don't make a big deal about showing them off. All right? People will notice or they won't notice or whatever. But, you know, your wacky socks as the center of your conversation, don't use them as a substitute for your personality. That's all I'm saying. As far as the 8 kids guy, you know what? I don't even have 8 kids. I only have 4. All right? But I do have this great conversational piece where someone will finally go, wow, wait, you have 4 kids? Yep, all boys. Like, wow, that is, you know, and then they'll comment on how many kids that is, and I'll be like, woof, no, that's nothing. My brother's got 8. You are a center point of conversation for me because the 8 kids guy, that is a great conversation, even if I'm not actually there. So they're not even my 8 kids, and I get mileage out of that story. So I don't know how wacky sock guy is crowding you out at all, dude. Seriously. I mean, you really have the time. Look, the only one that beats you, as Brian Regan would say, is the guy who's walked on the moon. All right. That's really your top story. Oh, really? 8 kids. Yeah, that's fascinating. I've been to the moon. Yeah. See, all right. He wins, but assuming he's not around, your 8 kids win out over almost everything. All right. All right. Maybe the guy who just lost his arm. Yeah, that guy would probably also have a better story than you. All right. But again, how many times can he pull that one off? Twice. That's, I mean, seriously, you can't get mileage out of the missing arm forever. Yeah. How needy. You're right. One more. 42. And my throat's going bad. Hold on. Let me pause for a drink. 42 is from my buddy Humongous. Humongous says, what is your favorite album? Oh, man, what a question. Because, yeah, obviously I have iTunes like any normal human being. I listen to MP3s, and I don't mean to imply that you need to have iTunes to be normal. I mean, I listen to music electronically. I listen to MP3s. I listen to songs on my various devices, and therefore I don't buy albums, I buy songs. And so albums are few and far between. But of my old albums, back when I was buying whole albums, the ones that I could listen to nonstop, if I had to be stranded on a desert island, then the ones that, oh man, what is with the, oh, shoot. Hold on, I'm sorry. I got a cord problem here because there's some static in there. I hope you guys didn't get some buzzing there for the last few minutes. I don't even know how far back that went. Anyway, Beck's Mellow Gold would probably be my number one because I love Beck's Mellow Gold. I could listen to that over and over and over. But also, I don't even know which album because I only have one. Maybe it's Chocolate City. But I have a Parliament Funkadelic album that just surprised me at how absolutely good it was. And that's an old one. R.E.M.'s Document is pretty solid. Beatles, I couldn't even choose which Beatles album I would most want to have. I don't even know. I don't know, because I was going to say Sgt. Pepper. But Revolver is one of my favorites. But the White Album would give me more songs. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But Mellow Gold would be the number one. I mean, that was the question you were asking. It's my favorite. So I'm going to go with Mellow Gold. There. We're done. All right. Now, before the sound issue drives me crazy, let's go ahead and turn it over to GLaDOS. She'll give you a recap of the episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Just Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use for my bumper music are available on iTunes. You check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Do you want instructions on making your own pocket mod? Go to pocketmod.com. They'll give you instructions to print and fold right there. For free, by the way. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy this podcast, please go out and spread the word. Tell other people about it. Let other people enjoy it as well. Don't forget my free games. Free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill. I don't have it written down anymore. I was just winging that one. Sorry. Two-thirds of a dozen others, all free, all the time. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions and topics to the Podomatic. And watch every week on the forums and Facebook for my listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact to go with my episode numbers, I am running out of ideas on those. Send them to me and save me all that grueling research that I have to do on my own. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, as always, the very best way to talk to me is you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together. We'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start every podcast, I go out and I post it up on Facebook and on my forums. Let people know I am recording anything that you reply to those. I will read it right here. This is your chance to become part of history. All right. The first one, this is from my website. First one is from, the only one. The only one. Wow, I put this thing up almost 3 hours ago. And the only person to love me, Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, what letter did you get for the Me Like Trivia Game of the Day special for December. Oh, I don't want to give things away, but since you're asking, I got Q. So the Me Like Trivia, if you guys aren't listening to Me Like Trivia, don't you ever listen to me. Go listen to Me Like Trivia. It is my Dungeon Master, DM Darks, Pat, and his friends Andrew and Pete, and they do trivia every week, and it's a really fun show. They're very entertaining guys, and I came on as a guest. They're doing the alphabet. Apparently, they had this marathon session where they got guest after guest after guest to call in. We had a little schedule, and we all signed up, and so each of us tuned in for, you know, 10 minutes where we get one letter of the alphabet, and so they go through, and I think it's 10 questions for each letter. I don't remember what we did. So they're up to E. I think I just listened to E this morning, and my letter was Q, and I had a great time doing it. Q will be coming out, I'm assuming, in, well, if we're on E now, then I don't know, what does that make, 2 weeks from now? So go listen, assuming he keeps putting them up every day like he's been doing. So go listen to Me Like Trivia. Like I say, all through the month of December, it's just going to be letters of the alphabet, and they're only, you know, they're 7 to 10 minutes apiece. Easy listening, and you get a daily dose of trivia. It's very, very fun. And like, God, I wish I could brag about some of the stuff that happened on my Q episode, because I was really happy with it. I did way better this time than I did last time. So, but yeah, it was good. Q. Thank you, Mr. Starks. And that one is done. So let's see if Facebook got some more people. Let's see. Facebook. Hold on. I can't see anything on here now. Oh, no wonder. I'm on my name and not on the Nerd Pride name. Let's go find that one. Click, 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 click. Nerd Pride Radio. That's me. Nerd Pride Radio. Oh, look at that. I've got several responses. Well, at least several notes here. Let's find out what it says. Sorry, guys. You know, I shouldn't handle all this clicking while it's paused, but you know what? Not today. Not today, Zerg. At least a couple people posted. Let's see. Yep. Oh, look at that. Aw, Mrs. Darks posted on Facebook and on Nerd Pride. Why? Because last week nobody posted anything. I'm sure she just didn't want me to feel unloved this time. So, let me do a reply. Come on. Where's comment? There it is. Man, I am an idiot. I'm sorry, I don't know how to work Facebook. Jeez. Get off my case, Mom. I shouldn't say Mom. My mom's actually listening. Hi, Mom. All right. For commentary, Sarah Beth, Mrs. Darks, she starts off by saying, not leaving you hanging tonight, my friend. Hey, I was right. Not leaving you hanging tonight. Evangeline sends some jokes. Evangeline is her daughter. Adorable. Why did the dragon go to the beach? Well, why did the dragon go to the beach? Because he wanted a sandwich. Aw, cute. What's black and white and black and white and black and white and green? Three skunks fighting over a pickle. That's adorable, Evangeline. Thank you. And the last one from Evangeline. What do you call an alligator in a vest? An investigator! Knee slappers. That's Sarah Beth's comment, is that these are knee slappers. Those are really good, Evangeline. Don't you listen to your mom's sarcasm, all right? She doesn't know. You are a brilliant comedian. I want to see more of those. Okay. And then Nellie posts up next, and Nellie says, because apparently I've been recording on Sundays for the last, well, not apparently, I have been recording on Sundays for the last few weeks. Apparently Nellie, now that she has a new job, is working Sunday nights, and she hasn't been able to post in for listening to Betrayal. But now, because Saturday happened to work out for me, I get some Nellie. So this is cool. Nellie says, yay, I got in too. Any update on you maybe heading to Gen Con this year? I don't want to give any updates for sure, but I think so. I think. I mean, Pat's going to be there, right? Right, Sarah Beth? Because, you know, he won free tickets to go back. Well, not free tickets. Free ticket. He won a pass to go back. So he can't just let that go to waste. I mean, Pat will be there, right? So, yeah, I really got to show up, too. I'm not going to say 100% because, you know, still got to get all my ducks in a row. But, yeah, I will be sorely disappointed if I don't make it. So you'll hear more. We'll keep talking. She says, I'm still working on a games to play list. Yay, Rhino Hero is at the top. I just saw a post from you that said that you played Rhino Hero. I'm fascinated to hear how it went. Have you heard of Pandemic Legacy? I have heard, but I don't know anything about it. She goes on and says, it's so good. It's Pandemic, but every time you play the game, it changes it permanently. You score the actual game board, rip up cards. Oh, wow. It also contains an advent calendar type box. After certain things happen, it will tell you what door to open, and it might contain more rolls or a new disease. Holy crap. I heard, okay, then I know what it's about then, because Risk, is it Risk Legacy? Is that the same? Because I know that there is a Risk game that has this same kind of build-up, is that every game that you play of Risk then changes how the game functions. And maybe it wasn't Risk, maybe it was a different game, but it's the same sort of concept, is that every time you play it, it makes permanent changes to the game itself. And so, you know, and you still have tons of replay value. It goes on for a long time. But yeah, again, the idea that, there are pieces that permanently change, borders that permanently shift, cards that you rip up and never use again, new cards that you have to create or find or, that just sounds brilliant. So, the idea that, now, personally, that is just a dream of mine that I can find a game that A, I like that much, and B, that I have enough time to actually play out multiple scenarios of the game that, you know, I could actually sit down and play 25 sessions of it over the course of a couple of years, it would probably take me. But the idea that I could keep playing this game over and over until it has changed into something new, so cool. What an idea. So it says, we're not doing so well on our game. Reddy and Bantok are completely screwed, and we cannot go there at all anymore. I have no idea what that means. Oh, Bangkok. Oh, sorry. Bangkok. When I record now, I have the computer moved way away from me so that I can see everything directly in front of me while keeping my face on the microphone. Before, I've always kind of kept everything side by side. That means shifting my eyes over to the left while my lips move to the right to talk into the microphone. Now it's all centered, but it also means it's a little further away. And yeah, I'm old. My eyes aren't that great. So, wow. Can't go to Bangkok anymore. That's really funny. I can't even imagine how that game rolls, but it sounds like it's a blast. So that would be super cool. Let's see. Oh. Don't tell my kids, but I got Small World. So that store that I was talking about where everything's got to go and everything's on sale. And yeah, they finally got it down to 40-something% off. And so I picked up Small World. And it's hiding now in the trunk of the car, and I'll have to move it up to the attic with the other Christmas presents later, but don't tell my kids. So I'm so excited. I'm getting so many games for Christmas this year. I'm really, really looking forward to this. Anyway, now it's done. That was the end of Nelly's message, and there's nobody else here. So we are all finished. Let me get back here so I can pause. Okay, we're done. Say goodnight, R2. Till next week, guys.